Hey there, this is it. This is Keith Malley with the final chapter of the Great American Novel. This is chapter 9, Growing Up. What did we learn? What did we learn through this? KeithandtheGirl.com/dadbook. Get the Great American Novel now. Also pick up the Dad Emails book, the latest book I just wrote. Great American Novel 2010, the Dad Emails 2024. I hope you had fun on this journey, and I'll talk to you next week.
Chapter 9, Growing Up. When life fucks me again, I always think about the Incredible Hulk. The guy went from small town to small town, places where people are cool and friendly, and he's met nothing but pricks, assholes big enough to make him turn into Hulk mode, and he hasn't given up yet. So who am I to give up? I have a saying, it's always darkest before the dawn. And I know that sounds stupid at first, but think about it. The night is at its darkest before the dawn comes up. And that's like life. Things always seem to be at their worst just before the sun rises or before there's light. Get it? You equate the light to things greatly improving, and you've got it. Yes, I was broke, chugging syrup, malt liquor, living out of a hostel with bunk beds full of strangers like I did when I first came to New York so many years ago, but that only meant one thing. That's right, the dawn. The dawn was going to be fantastic. Did Maxwell Smart ever give up? Did he ever answer the phone that was his shoe and go, "Hello, Chief? Yeah, can't someone else do it?" No, he did it, week in and week out. This is your mission, should you choose to accept it. Did Tom Cruise ever say, "You know what, not today. I need to take care of this nasty crotch itch"? Of course he didn't. He did his job. And when your job is regularly saving the world, you can't not show up. You see what I'm saying? My buddy Jimmy Dean said it best. Life is a bit like sausage. You get out what you put in. If that ain't the goddamn truth. The bad thing about being down in the dumps is that we cling to almost any thread of bullshit hope because we can't take it anymore. Then we're destroyed a little extra. I was living in a hostel again, flat broke, when I saw an exciting ad in the Village Voice. Why I was always reading this haughty, politically smug newspaper, I can't tell you. Oh yeah, I can, because it was free. Thing is, I gotta pay the engineer extra for us to go back and fix that, so sorry about that. Anyway, now you know why. The point is, this ad was for being a modeling agent. Now, if you're not sure what the job is, then neither did the receptionist. Just know that it's a bad idea. I have to say this, I've never been to a mass interview that ended up worthwhile. It was bullshit and reminded me of all those other bullshit interviews I've went to. And this is our husband and wife team. They're gold members. They're at the gold members meeting in Hawaii. They're both deaf and mute. Think of what you can do. Do you like to party? If you like music, money, and fun, this job is for you. And there's me. I like music, money, and fun. These are the three things I like. Do you like to drink beer and have hot teenage girls lick your balls without the worry of law? People who don't want money, money, money need not apply. I was living in my car. My parents and friends ridiculed me. Now I buy them cars. I was allergic to silk. Now my entire outfit's silk. Money changes you. Who here wants to make money? Stand on your chair and let me hear you. Money! Louder! Money! Louder! If you could do it so loud they hear you on the street, I'll give you each $100 right here today. Money! Money! And a car wrecks outside. Very good. Now you'll get your $100 today after you sell enough bottles of cologne on the street for 50 cents profit each. Excited? Yeah! Modeling agent video. The narrator begins with, "Welcome to the exciting world of modeling," and $3 signs flash on the screen. Perhaps you've heard of modeling before. It's been around for many years, from the days of old to the stick figures we have today. Cindy Crawford, for example, is a model. Now that you understand what models do, let's look into the world of model scouts. And dollar signs flash on the screen again. A world where you're the boss! And that's when I took another waiter job, and I was at my worst behavior. Hey waiters, you know all that rage you've been building up over the years, be it from the customers that tilt their head and give that forefinger, "come here, slave" motion, to the repeat customer that is always disgusted about everything? Take it out on the next prick by mouthing, "fuck you." The customer will give that "what" look, and you just point at your crotch and mouth it again, "fuck you." And then when you get turned into the manager with a smile that's hard to contain, look at the customer like they're nuts. "I what? Was I scratching my head and it looked like I was giving the finger? I don't get it. I what?" Ma'am, we've never had a complaint about Keith's attitude. In fact, we found he's the easiest to get along with. Very friendly and lets things wash off his back every day. And just continue. No, but the scratching, that wouldn't explain me mouthing, F you. Was I calling out to another waiter? Sometimes we ask each other for help, I don't know. Then when she leaves you and the manager in disgust, flip her off. I what? Lean in and whisper, the only thing that keeps me from kicking your bitchy little ass is knowing you're a loser and you'll be one for the rest of your life. Fuck your mother for not aborting you. I what? Staying at the last hostel, I saw the walls covered with Keith Haring paintings. That reminded me I needed to get my ass in gear. If this fazool can make it. I didn't get art as it was, of course, but this was insane. The drawings were all valued at ridiculous amounts, $200 for an outline of a child on all fours, and I wondered if he ever just spent a day painting to buy a new car. You think he ever tried to pay rent with a painting? Keith, this is the third time you're late for rent. You're a nice guy, but my hands are tied. I need $500 today or you're out on the street. End of story. I understand and I have your money. Oh, good. Here it is. This, the painting. Yes, it's an outline of an adult lifting up the outline of a child, and I value it at $700. Okay, this is ridiculous. I need cash. Oh, this is better than cash. I can churn these out all day like it's nothing, but you should see the growing rate on these. Keith! Okay, look. Here's a freshly painted one. It's two adult outlines struggling to lift a big heart symbol with lines coming out of it. That's another $700, and that's for you, like a bonus for being late. I need cash now. Okay, here's one with adult outlines flying into an adult outline's open head. What the hell are you? Okay, take this one with you too. It's adult outlines flying around in front of the American flag with 13 stars and 8 stripes. It's very powerful. I drew lines around them to show that they're flailing about. It's whatever you want to think it is. Okay, that's it. I'm calling the constable. Wait, I also do pregnant adult outlines, people outlines with flowers for heads, and even wolf outlines that stand upright like humans, like with lines and everything. Hey, how about two dolphin head outlines speaking lines at a flying angel person outline? Her wings are moving too. You can see that by the little lines. You're going to jail. I have AIDS? Keith Haring doodles subconsciously on the phone and he just made $500. I think they should take this guy's bowel movements and hang them up at the Museum of Art. Then again, in all fairness, we're the ones making jokes and they're the ones making the cash. I call this painting cum. Oh, cool. What's it made of? My cum. It was hard to save money in a hostel that cost over $100 a week. Every time you had money, you had to spend it right away. Then you took your spare change to make prank phone calls at the in-house payphone. It was tough to get ahead. I noticed that around the hostel were all these filled out slips of paper that list old hostelers' names from around the world with their address and phone number. What's this about? Can you picture this phone call? Hi, my name's Keith. I live at the hostel now.
What you want?
Remember how the toilets would clog up here?
Why you call?
We both stayed here, right?
I call police.
Can you believe those AIDS drawings? $400. Like, are they serious? The slips of paper that are written are on old dry cleaning slips because the place used to be a dry cleaning building. The broken motorized dry cleaning garment holder is still up as the hostel brags what the building used to be, as if this will entice people.
Ever live in an old Arby's? We have a deep fryer right next to your head. Oh, don't worry. The grease is hard and cold. You couldn't dip a chip in it if you tried. Call for an appointment.
I went to Dangerfield's, Rodney Dangerfield's comedy club in the city, on a Tuesday night to stop thinking about my problems. I saw 6 comics perform. One wrote for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. One was Stewart's sidekick when he had his MTV show. One was featured on Rosie O'Donnell. One taught a New York City improv class, etc. They all sucked. Every one. I only did it once before on a lark, but with the unsolicited recommendation from all the people that came and left the hostel, I decided to finally do stand-up regularly. That's when I knew that I was better than most at something that just came naturally. I hated the word, but I was a comedian. I actually performed at Dangerfield's that very night. They left a mic on, and I did a 2-second show while everyone filed out.
I got more laughs when I took a dump at a shit factory. Thank you. Good night.
It takes a real set of balls to do stand-up or be a writer or be any kind of artist. Not because of the obvious reasons where you're alone in the spotlight, but basically you're saying you were born special with a rare gift very few possess. You come across a doctor, you don't feel bad not being one yourself. You could have been one too had you taken 12 years of school. But to come across as a comedian, well, how do you be like him? Oh, you can't. I was born this way, like the golden child. What I say is so funny and interesting that you have to pay money to hear it. Yeah, you have some funny friends, but nothing is this funny. I'm fucking funny. I can't just tell you a joke. I have to first charge you a cover and a 2-drink minimum. Oh, trust me, I'm funny. I had no schooling. I'm just born this way. I don't even write my stuff down sometimes. I just talk shit. It's still amazingly cool and hilarious. God's gift to the world. Usually when I do stand-up, you'll see a tape recorder behind me recording everything I say. That's right. Such great stuff comes out of my mouth. It astounds even me. Why the hell have I been working all these years when I could have been living off of talking? That's exactly what I'm doing now. I'm that good. Speaking of recorders, though, I can't concentrate on a comic when he has a recorder or notes to look at. I wonder what he wrote down to remind himself of jokes, or I end up staring at the recorder. You have a recorder recording your shit? Do you understand we can see it? Use it in your act. After the show, rewind it and go over what you were thinking with the audience like you're giving DVD commentary. Give us some of that behind-the-scenes shit. Or do your thing, then show us that the recorder is actually empty and that it doesn't matter because you're that confident that you're a good performer. Then pull another recorder out of your pants pocket. I was living in a hostel deciding to be a comedian, but girls didn't understand that I had no money. Being a man, there's no explanation for not having money that a woman will understand. Ever. I had no money and all my possessions were being held by a coworker, John Petrie, while I lived in my $450 a month bunk bed. For richer or for poorer is a saying, just like 40 acres and a mule. When she says, I do, the man understands that the woman doesn't really mean for richer or for poorer. It's like someone asking you how your day's been. You just say you're good. You understand the rules. New York City drug dealers didn't bother me on the streets because they could tell I was broke. Women, something never clues them in. Even when I say I have no money whatsoever. I'll be at the airport. Just take a cab to meet me. I literally have no money, not one penny, and this is just a very bad time we're meeting up. Well, it can't cost that much. It doesn't matter what it costs. I'm broke. Nothing. What if you took the subway? But drug dealers and bums, they know when you're strapped for cash. When I was flat broke, not one bum has ever asked me for money. They can see it in your walk. Oh, excuse me, kind sir. And I turn around. Oh, can you spare a... And then they see your eyes. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Jesus. Ooh. Good luck, man. That's the one time a bum doesn't want to make eye contact with you. Yeah, hey, bum, for the past 2-3 years, I've been giving you my loose change, 6 days a week. I'm sure that's added up to quite a nice sum. It was very nice of you, thank you. Yeah, the thing is, I need to borrow $20. And they just stare at me. They never have it. The best thing to do when you have little money, I believe, is to try to gamble with it. If you're playing at a real place like Atlantic City, chances are excellent you'll walk away a winner. Playing poker is also a great time to drink to help you forget about your money woes. If you're playing low stakes, you should drink a beer for every $5 you're playing with. That's a general Las Vegas-style card rule. Someone asked me if I should be playing poker since I was so broke, but that's exactly why I should be playing. You see, when I play poker, I play to win. I'll say it again, losing is for losers. Some people go to gamble with $20, $40, or even $100 that they can afford to lose. I'll have fun, and worst case scenario, I'll lose the money I set aside that I was willing to lose anyway. Well, with that attitude, I will take your money. If you're willing to give it, I'm willing to take it. If I don't win, I don't eat tomorrow. That's called having a must-win attitude. And good for me, because soon I'll have it all. Dating was impossible. You want some in this day and age, it ain't dinner and a movie. You ever see Blind Date? These people go rock climbing, parasailing, fortune telling, then they help build a house followed by a ball game and some kayaking, and then it's time for lunch. Well, first I think we'll take the cinema, and then maybe we complement that with some fine dinner fare. You might as well split the check in half while you're at it. In the hostel, I planned a big night with a coworker named Claire. She went into improv with sketch writing, so I thought it'd be special if I surprised her with Spinal Tap tickets. Rent on the hostel would wait a week. You know, they knew I wasn't going anywhere. They were doing a rare tour in New York, and I knew it'd be a sweet surprise. She said yes that day, but I had been drinking the night before and hadn't yet slept. When I retardedly laid down for an hour nap, I ended up sleeping through half the concert, leaving her standing alone at our agreed meeting spot. You do this to a cool, hot girl, she's ready to slit her wrists. It does not compute, but I'm pretty. Her phone calls woke me up, but I wouldn't answer them. I just laid there planning my excuse for the next day, upset I blew what would have been an incredible date. My excuse ended up being that a crazy hostel tenant turned off my alarm. We argued. I started to leave to make the date, and then he came behind me and pushed me down a flight of stairs. I ended up at the hospital. Come on, what was I supposed to say? Oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't make it. Apparently, I'm a drunk.
other things I thought of saying that next day. It's not like I enjoyed myself. I do this to everybody. Okay, I owe you. How does $20 sound? You're hot. You could have gotten in for free. I was there. Where were you? I thought you said no. Well, did you confirm? Oh, you are cute when you're angry. Spinal Tap isn't real, stupid. Let the makeup sex begin. I saw you making out with somebody, so I left, hurt. And when she says how she wasn't with anybody, I'd reply, oh, my bad. So you free Thursday? I've always been crazy with my excuses. Hi, I'm calling into work to say, I can't come in today. I'm sitting on vomit. Yeah, I dressed up in my work outfit, but I got in the subway and I sat down in vomit. And of course I left early for catastrophes, but I got home, right? And then I changed into a cab, and guess what? Yep, I sat on vomit. And yes, I brought an extra set of pants for work, but all of a sudden I have the flu and I surprise dumped in my new pants. I can't hear you, sir. I'm busy vomiting like a sprinkler. Claire and I never went out after all. Eventually, I quit showing up at work. The pussy that I finally got to drip had dried up, and I was done serving the public. Also, it turned out that John Petrie was a cocaine addict, and he skipped town with all my shit. My computer, the only copy of a book I was halfway done writing, everything. Everything I ever owned and the stories I was writing every day that kept me sane. This was originally posted at keithmalley.com. On February 1st, 2001, a coworker at Steak Frites in Union Square, New York City, held all my stuff for me, from my computer, TV and VCR, to all my smaller personal possessions, while I was staying at a New York City hostel. Sometime around the end of April, my friend John Petrie left his place on 55th Street between 8th and 9th Avenues with all my stuff. I didn't have a phone number at the hostel, and I'm hoping he's still holding everything or put it all in a storage area somewhere. Along with the things taken are computer disks and the computer that holds my only copies of my recent ratings and videos. What makes me the sickest is that this includes the first 200 to 250 pages of my latest book, A Decent Standard of Living. I can't accept that this is gone. If you can get the word out to John Petrie, approximately 5'10", 150 pounds, 27 years old, short curly hair, glassy blue or green eyes, said he did writing work here and there for MTV News, plays in a band, please let him know about shite.com and that I'd greatly appreciate a call. If anyone knows anything, be it where my stuff is or even a lead, please contact me through the website. I need that computer CPU and or the black leather bag of discs and videotapes. Anyone that can help, of course, will be compensated. Sincere thanks, Keith Malley. Months later, from Jenna Warren, jenwar55@hotmail.com, to yambag2001@yahoo.com, date Tuesday, September 11, 2001, 6 a.m., Keith. Hi, you don't know me and I don't really know you, but my friend John Petrie told me about you. He showed me some of your writing when we worked at the same restaurant. I only know a little bit about how he came to Albany and I don't live there anymore, but I have a few things that might be yours and I'd like to send them to you. I can tell you that John left NYC after having an overdose of something or other. If you know him, you know his favorite things. Someone from his family came to get him and his stuff, and then I think it was even his mother, had him arrested for something to do with drugs, I think because he wouldn't go to rehab. Anyway, after that, he started to work at the same restaurant as me in Albany. He said he had to save money to go back to New York. That's when he let me read your script. I did enjoy it. John left about 2 months ago after getting robbed and in some kind of trouble. I think he went to Philadelphia or New Orleans, but I know he didn't take anything with him and he left a couple of boxes with me. I just moved myself and I was unpacking today and I found something with your name on it. That's when I looked on the internet to see if you were famous yet and I found your address. I don't have anything like your TV or VCR or anything. I think all of John's stuff got robbed, but I have a disc with your name on it and the name of the book you said you were looking for on the internet. I can send it to you if you want, just send me an address. If I ever see John again, I will tell him you are looking for him, but I think you might see him first. He said you were a good guy. Jenna. The letter was coincidentally written the early morning of September 11th. She didn't return any of my emails. It was a week or so until I got to a computer and saw her letter. 9/11 was in my head, and at the time, my email wasn't. I woke up late that day to two voice messages from my mom. A plane hit the World Trade Center. Next call, another plane hit the World Trade Center. I jumped out of bed after that second call and watched the events across the street at the local bar. From being halfway across the city, you saw the sky pitch black, but the devastation was on TV. The president was giving speeches, and all I was thinking was, don't you have some buttons to push? Watch, Bush will relapse and we'll all get our real revenge. In addition to the towers and the Pentagon getting attacked, one plane, now known as Flight 93, was apparently taken over by passengers and crashed into an open field in Pennsylvania that happened to be a half-hour drive from my hometown. The only thing heard on the news about it was Somerset. Somerset plane, Somerset catastrophe, Somerset hijacking Somerset. Soon after the shock, I became one of those people that were questioning what was important. I started questioning being a comedian and writing my dumb books. How is this bullshit art so important after all? I write and I talk. How does that help the world? I needed to do something different. I had to stop being silly. And then one day, my first post 9/11 joke popped into my head. Will America find anything funny after September 11th? I don't know. Does Israel find anything funny after lunch? And soon everything was back to normal, and Americans hated Americans, just like the good old days. And soon it registered that my computer and backup disks were gone. I never did political humor. Finally, I did a chapter of it. Gone. The songs I wrote when I was 18 about the girl I first had sex with. Hard work. My dad. My first attempts at poetry titled, I Like to Drink Beer. All Kinds of Pussy. That's Jesus Sleeping, So Shut Your Fucking Mouth. And I Love You, Mandy Moore. All of it. Gone. What bothered me the most is that whether I was in a go-nowhere waiter job or security guard position or living in a hostel, I was at least writing down what I thought was funny and interesting. I was working on making it big no matter how it looked. Then my shit gets stolen, and it feels like the time I took writing that was stolen. I wasted that time, which might only be 3 months for most of it, plus the army days I wrote my serious songs. The times I, God damn it! The times I spent partying and moving around was like college. I was having fun, but the whole time it was part of an investment. Just live life and write. Damn you, John Petrie. By the way, if John Petrie is ever found in the bottom of a lake, rocks protruding through his dead skull, it's a different John Petrie that I hated and vowed to kill. Remember that song that goes, take my money, take my obsession, take my possessions, I don't need that. Well, that was obviously never written by somebody who had all their shit taken. Once, while I was taking a dump at the hostel, I looked up and I saw that the bathroom walls were covered with little sayings about books and reading. Oh, not now, hostel. I wiped up and came back with a marker. The purpose of fiction is to help us answer the questions we must constantly be asking ourselves. Who do we think we are, and what do we think we're doing? Robert Stone. I think I'm Keith. I think I'm taking a shit. Laugh, and the world will laugh with you. Cry, and you'll cry alone. 'Cause the world is a fuck. The actual act of reading a good book is a pleasure. You are just there with your legs swinging over the arm of a chair, your eyes on a page, your mind connecting with the mind of the author, Natalie Goldberg. Books are for faggots! I don't have any books, asshole wall. They were all stolen. That's right, all my comedy books were gone too. Paul Reiser, gone. Ray Romano, gone. Whoopi Goldberg, gone. Okay, they weren't all keepers anyhow, but they made up my collection. I swear I'm okay now, but I can still picture that cocksucker just sitting there drinking the novelty beer and the overseas sake I saved for a special occasion, his feet propped up on my CPU, throwing the Winnie the Pooh doll around that my sister gave me. When I had shoulder surgery, my sister sent me poo in a tissue arm sling. Oh, it was so cute. It was a better gift than the gift of life. Laughing his ass off to a dice video on my TV. Oh, life doesn't get sweeter than this. He's playing with my magic eight ball. Will Keith find me and kill me? Oh, look hazy, and throwing my Microsoft Windows and Office around the house like they're frisbees. You can't trust anyone. Married? Leave them now. They'll only fuck you. Not literally, of course. We could only wish, right, guys? Every time became beer time, and the fridge was buying. I'm going to drink so much, I'll be able to write it off as a deduction on my federal income tax. Home isn't where the heart is, I thought to myself. Home is where you finally get tired of lugging around your shit. And when you literally have nothing, there's really no home anymore. Oh my God, my tax papers are gone too. You know, watching a beer being poured, by the way, is like watching a child grow up. There's something about it that's just unexplainably magical. It's funny when you're out with the guys and you make a deal, something like, oh, if the drink giver happens to look this way before we finish this pool game, we're meant to drink another pitcher. Soon we're breaking pool cues over each other's heads. Hey, tits! Oh, look, she's looking. It was meant to be. True story. I'm broke, living at a hostel, pissed off, and I don't have rent for the upcoming week, but I know watching a Survivor episode will get my mind off my new problem. I go downstairs into the TV room excited. It turns out this TV hog is going to watch a rerun of The Nutty Professor come hell or high water, and I definitely wouldn't be viewing Survivor without an out-and-out fist fight.
Knowing I'd be late with rent, I knew I couldn't afford to get into trouble, so I played it cool. He watched his movie. However, I knew I'd still be getting my hour's worth of entertainment somehow. I thought about when we first met earlier, he mentioned that he was staying at the hostel as a way to get his life together. His fiance told him that he had one last chance to stop drinking through AA or else she was leaving him. Loving her with all his heart and soul and knowing that she was everything he had was what made him come here. I then went back downstairs and took a beer out of the fridge. You want a beer? No, no! And this pissed me off more. No thank you might have been more appropriate, okay? Beer ain't free, even in Harlem. You sure? Yes, no beer. Whatever, that's stupid. And then I go back upstairs only to return later when I'm empty. Eddie Murphy's funny, huh? Hey, I'm getting another Sam Adams. That's good shit. You want one? No, it's my treat. No beer. You sure, dude? They're very good. And then he sighs. I'm in AA. I am too, I said. So what? It's Sam Adams. Now that I think about it, that could be another commercial idea. I then drink a gulp and I pop open another can and I hand it to him. You don't run your own life? Christ, it's just beer. And he drank it. Then another and another, and giving away beer was never fun like this. I then encouraged him to call up his family and loved ones drunk. Then he called his fiance and yelled out his thoughts on it being his life and how disgusting it is for her to have a say in anything he ever does. I fed him lines like, stop castrating me and your mother's a cancerous whore. Every day after that, I've never seen a person more sad and depressed in my entire life. I then pictured running into him homeless on the streets on a cold night, rocking back and forth crying. Why me? How'd this happen? And there's me standing over him in my Brooks Brothers suit. Survivor. Survivor. Then one day, like realizing I was meant to be funny after 9/11, I had another stupid epiphany. I'm not special. We look the same. We all think the same. We act the same. The same feelings go through all our heads. Why? Because none of us are special. A brother of mine had a panic attack and dropped out of community college. You know how he was cured? I reminded him he wasn't special. He went back to school the next day and got top of his class there and in regular college. When I was robbed at gunpoint by two guys in Brooklyn one night, I was over it the next day. I remembered I wasn't special. My new way of thinking upsets people, of course. If I came home early from work and I caught my girlfriend getting fucked in the ass by the neighbor, I'd leave a very disappointing reaction. I'd just walk upstairs to the bedroom saying, that's too bad. I really liked you. Keith, no, please don't. Shh. It's okay. It makes sense. How's it make sense? It makes sense because things were going good. Can we please talk about, you're going to have to leave. You know that, right? Well, actually, it's my place. You'd have to leave. It figures. Now, no matter what life throws my way, I'm okay. Don't be confused, though. That doesn't mean that someday I won't find you and choke you, John Petrie, with thumbs. So I'm okay, and many more months go by. I end up moving into a New York City Lower East Side apartment with two fellow hostelers by somehow saving money working secretary jobs. Yes, jobs. These bitches aren't easy to keep. In fact, I was very easy to scam at that time because I needed money and I needed it quick. National Civil Service Careers Center. David Stewart at National Civil Service Careers Center, 505 8th Avenue, New York, 10018. Is killing a man even a sin anymore? There's been a lot of changes in the Bible lately. Can you actually tear out vocal cords? Like, are they actual cords? This is your E chord. Look at it. While John Petrie stole all my stuff and ran away, David Stewart offended me to my face and continued right on with his business. I saw an ad for National Civil Service Career Center informing the public about immediate jobs in post offices from clerk to carrier. I decided to sign up, pass the test, and work in a post office. Good money, great benefits, and 1,000 more funny stories. When I got there for my appointment, I filled out simple information about myself and took a test that contained number sequences. What comes next in the sequence of 22346. Alike or different addresses? Are these totally alike or a little different? 107 Clemont Avenue, 170 Clemont Avenue. And a section where you saw five blocks with information inside labeled A through E, and you marked the circle where the information came from. A, high. B, gone. C, 1445 goal. Which letter contains the information 1445 goal? I breezed through the test and was later sent to see an interviewer who showed me that the only thing I missed was one of the number sequence questions. She then told me how civil service jobs worked. First, you paid $397 for the course needed to take the government test. Then when you pass the test, you get hired. Knowing I could pay for the course in payments, I decided it was worth the price and my new job would soon pay for itself. These postal workers are idiots, but everyone envies their job. I handed the lady my $120 down and then came that Saturday for class, dropping another $117. For those that did bad on the sample questions above, that's $237. I was given two cheap photocopied books needed for the course, and I joined a room of 40 or 50 classmates for day one of three, each day taking 5 hours. "You should all have pencils," began the teacher. A 40-year-old kiss-ass was the first classmate I heard address the teacher, holding up his pencil, "A number two pencil?" And I wanted to yell already, "No, dick, a number 17 pencil!" I could sit through the class for a good job, but damn, this was going to be draining. "Okay, you all have three books, right?" And everyone exploded. "We only have one book! We were only given one book!" "Easy, morons! Are we going to be stuck without a book as the class goes on? They'll figure it out. Calm down." A worker soon gives us another photocopied book. As he gives me my third textbook, he tells me to also keep the other two books. Hold on to the first one, though, remember. "Really? I was ready to throw these $237 books out. But save it, you say. I should save it." And then the class began. 741 Chestnut Street is exactly alike or different from 741 Chestnut Street without the T. And people couldn't yell out the answer fast enough. As the teacher droned on, I flipped through the section of the book he skipped and read that it bragged that 80 to 90% of the people going to take the civil service test never took this course. Then I read how their program works. First, you take their course. Then they tell you where to take the test. Then you get a list of post offices that you can interview with, and then they decided if they hire you. Soon I was paying attention to the vibe I was getting off the teacher, and that's when it hit me. You don't have to take their course. They're not part of the government, and passing the government test doesn't get you the job immediately, as my interviewer told me, the test which anyone can take at any time. I also found out later that it takes years to be called for these government jobs, be it post office or toll booth clerk. I then left the class and explained how I misunderstood that I needed to pay the money for a government job. I didn't write in the book or take it out of the building. I didn't take any lesson time from the class. I expected a refund of my money right away. I then met with the director of National Civil Service Career Center, David Stewart. David leads me into his office while telling me how difficult the big test is and how I won't pass without his classes.
"You think you can pass this test without my help?"
And I've been in a post office before. "Absolutely," I reply, and he counters with, "You don't look so smart."
"Wow. Do you have a genius IQ?"
"I don't know, but going over 2.5 hours of seeing if two addresses are exactly alike,
can you take the bar exam without studying for it?"
No offense, but I don't think the post office test compares with the bar exam.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Right there, I knew I was dealing with scum, and he continues,
If you did good on your practice test, you wouldn't have needed this course. Your interviewer wouldn't have accepted you."
"Okay, they won't take my money if I'm too smart." "I missed one question," I told him. "How good is good?" And he ignores me and goes on about the difficulty of the test. I simply tell him that I received no service, was misled, and that I'm going to have to get a refund. He reaches into his desk only to pull out a form I need to fill out and sign, saying that my case needs to be investigated by the accounting department to see if I can receive part of my $237. Accounting department. Accounting department? I just paid you guys not 10 minutes ago. I know what drawer my money's in. I can point to it. When I asked if I could talk to an accountant or a supervisor, he showed me I was indeed stupid by smartly remarking, "It's Saturday. People don't work on Saturday." God, I hate that tone. I returned the books but wouldn't fill out the form. What was there for an accounting representative to review? I told David I was going to wait until I talked to someone before filling anything out. I feel like I'm being scammed.
A scam? Oh, this is a scam? Now you get no money. You were going to get something out of the already $237 that I gave, but now you get nothing.
Oh, what a great way to prove that something isn't a scam. Don't give them back their money. Then he told me I'd have to take him to court if I wanted my money back. Okay, thanks for the idea. The troll-like muttering fuck knows people don't sue, so he didn't care. Get out of my office. Oh, I'll try that technique the next time a credit agency calls. Mr. Malley, we need at least hang up.
but we need... Go away now! When I slip and fall, I don't sue. When a dog bites my leg, I don't sue. When you bully me at 27 years old and call me dumb, I'll try to destroy you. I was so mad. I went home, the ride being 52 ounces away. I pounded even more beers as I started justifying my drinking. You know what? Some people collect stamps as a hobby. My hobby, I drink. But in all fairness, you know, not many stamp collectors wake up sweaty and shaking going, oh, where are my damn stamps? Who the hell spilled out the rest of my stamps? I don't look smart enough to take the post office test, though in his defense on my stupidity, he was the one with my $237. I couldn't tell his supervisor for satisfaction, he's in on the scam too. As for the Better Business Bureau, no one checks it. Now, we're going to have to take this one down the street level. After I arrived at court, my girlfriend at the time called my cell phone. I felt like such an adult telling her where I was. That's when she informed me I've actually been an adult for quite some time now. Even if you know it's a lie, it's sweet the nice things couples say to each other, isn't it? At court, I ended up winning only a third of my money back, losing the cash that went to a non-refundable processing fee that I signed. Even though the arbitrator, an acting judge, hated this guy like I did, he had to do what he thought was right, which is fine. $80 is still $80, and I never got to sue somebody before. It was all very exciting calling this guy a scumbag in a court of law, and I was content with the decision. It's amazing how easy it is to sue someone, though. Just make up names and keep suing someone you hate, just to take up their time. All of a sudden, I see why America has so many frivolous lawsuits. It's fucking fun. National Man Boy Love Association versus David Stewart. Are both parties present? I probably would have won the full amount had I taken a different strategy. Here's me in court. Here's a Channel 2 investigation internet printout about a case like mine, and here's my receipt. Let's go. Mr. Malley, if you're claiming a case, then so here's my stuff. Get it. Another bad move, when the judge was busting the defendant's balls by saying, well then tell me, why are we even here today? I interrupted everything by saying, oh God, this is one of those moments you wish you could just bottle, you know? Excuse me? Yeah. I did get upset at things after all, and those few times it was too big to ignore, I turned it into stand-up. I started getting all my aggression out at the local open mic freak show art house down the street, the famous Surf Reality, now defunct for you hip New Yorkers. If something was troublesome or embarrassing, I said it on stage and I was fine right away. No reason to ever repeat that joke. I was cured. My girl at the time would be my gauge for what was funny. I never repeat my stand-up jokes, so I don't refine things by testing them out in clubs. If I happen to have had said something that really makes my girlfriend laugh, I'll make a note of it and use it that weekend. So after a kick-ass stand-up performance, it's not right when people come up to me and congratulate me. Call up my girlfriend. She was the judge. Of course, when I fuck up, you can't blame me either. Blame her. How was your stand-up tonight, Keith? Jesus Christ, you blew it! You were horrible! How was any of that funny? After finishing my 40th performance at the open mic, I was informed about tryouts being held at the famed Downtown Laugh Factory New York Comedy Club. I appreciated people telling me to try out bigger places in the past, but I refused to pass out flyers or ask people to see me so I could perform. A tryout thing with no cost or people to bring that have to drink a bunch of shit? Done. I told my mom I was going to audition the next day. She told me she'd say the rosary for me. Hey, thanks. Why not? Then she asked me what time I was going on. After I told her the tryouts were from 4 to 8, I asked her how that's important for the rosary. Does Mary need to know? Is she up in heaven? I got your prayers, but I mean Jesus. You didn't mention what time tomorrow or anything. What comedy club? Oh, the one in New York. Thanks for the info. Really, throw me a bone here. Like, what the hell? What's your son gonna be wearing? Give me something. Comics are weird, scary, and pathetic. They're funny because of their anger, but then after the show, they're still walking around on planet sad, all miserable, gloomy, and upset. You just want to grab them by their pretentious shirt collar. Shut up! I don't want to talk to you like this. Wait till you're on stage where it's funny. My God, did you really get into a car wreck and have a divorce today or what? The worst comics are the ones that yell at you for not laughing at the jokes you paid hard-earned cash money to hear. Why aren't you laughing? This shit is funny. I didn't know it was S&M comedy night. Laugh, bitch! I woke up early the day of the big night, practicing once again what I already had known forwards and backwards, timing it to the second. If it went like this today, I thought, gold. In my bedroom, everything's gem mint 10. It takes balls to be a comedian, doesn't it? Not for the obvious reasons like the audience or the pressure, but because you have the balls to say, look at me, I'm funny. Oh, stop, please, thank you. Okay, that's nice. Don't be ridiculous, stop. Thank you. Thanks, stop, I didn't even say nothing yet. Too kind, how silly.
We're not going to get anywhere with this kind of applause. Thank you. Settle down now, please. Come on, stop laughing already. I was ready. I had friends come down to check the place out with me, and if I didn't get hired for whatever reason, they would act like they were trying out also. Then they'd take dumps on stage. Hey, comedy judges, you guys are on a new reality show. There's a camera over there, a camera over there. What the hell do you guys think you're doing? We're from the Comedy Cellar. Fuck you! We'll start a comic rivalry. Kind of like the way things were between Cheers and the local Irish pub. But instead of just getting drunks to hate each other, you're getting miserable, angry drunks to hate each other. The Comedy Wars. My friends and I came in with beer and plan on having some retarded fun. I can either watch fantastically great comics or fantastically horrendous comics. That day, it was fantastically horrendous comics. When they weren't on stage, however, painful. Nothing worse than a room full of comedians, and you can quote me on that. My two friends and I were the only good test audience there as the 2 hours of people came to a close. By that time, we were drunk, and I caught myself laughing at retarded shit only because I was hammered. I'd quickly cover it up. I didn't want to look like those loser hacks were actually funny. And then I'd make the so-so sign with my hand. I mean, that joke was okay, I guess. I was more laughing at what I would have said there. That night, I got called back to perform for another day, but it didn't sound like a paid gig, and I wasn't sure if everyone got called back and this was a scam for people to bring in friends. I'd find out soon after I talked to others, I thought. My friend got called back, and he was a bumbling idiot, and that made me nervous. I planned on talking to the guy that told me about it. It was a sick shame how much I hoped he didn't get a call. I pictured the conversation. Did you get called back the other day?
No.
Oh, thanks.
Did you, Keith?
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to make sure you didn't so that I knew the thing was legit. So that's good. But anyway, I thought you were real good. So fuck him, right?
On my way out, he said I was horrible and that I didn't even have the right to walk past the comedy club.
How'd that make you feel? Now I know I want to do it for sure. I like comedy, so I decided I'd be a good stand-up. Well, I like being healthy. That doesn't make me a doctor. My friend Chris did stand-up too and was horrible, yes, but I tried to make him feel better by reminding him I was laughing.
Yeah, but you're laughing for all the wrong reasons.
Who cares why? Your job is to get me to laugh, and I was laughing. It's like when a chick's sucking my dick. I don't wonder why she's sucking my dick. I don't think, is she just using me to get back at her boyfriend? Does she just want to feel the ghetto experience of blowing somebody at a gas station toilet? What's she thinking about right now? No, who cares? She's sucking your dick. But all I was really thinking about was how I did good. This was it, baby. Fuck John Petrie and fuck the fake United States postal system. Everyone sucked and I was good. People would be telling jokes like, and who are these people standing still on airport moving sidewalks? They're like cattle on display. Walk, people. Who's just standing there? And I'm in the back drinking my beer and I'm thinking, this guy. I mean, come on, I do. It's moving on its own. What's the hurry? Take a load off. Relax. Plus, I was thrilled that this is how I'd make it because I have no patience for bringing people in or passing out flyers to a show not featuring myself. Sometime before that, I was invited to perform at a club. I arrived only to find out that the 2-hour time I was given is the time I'd be passing out flyers on the street. If enough people showed up, then we'd put on a show. I told them to go fuck themselves, and my friend and I drank beers all night as irate comics pointed me out to each other. I was definitely brought here under false pretenses, and I'm sorry if the flyer thing is normal, but I won't do it. How long you been doing stand-up?
Since December, a couple months, I guess, maybe 6.
He condescendingly replies as if to say, exactly. And it was hard to keep quiet. How long have you been doing it? 14 years and still passing out flyers to some generic show? Does that make you better and more proud? I often find myself saying the wrong things to comedians and performers, especially ones that aren't famous at all.
I just did stand-up to see if I can. If it normally takes 8 or 10 years to really make it, fuck that. I'll get known some other way. People are touring for 15 years and aren't getting known. Do something else. That's ridiculous.
You think so, Keith?
I do. It's absurd. I don't know. How long have you been doing comedy?
Over 20 years.
Oh, that's cool. Good for you. Good for you. That's cool.
The 6.5-minute performance at New York Comedy Club ended up being a success, but it also ended up being a bringer show after all, which I obviously didn't participate in. The bringing part. These cocksuckers. And after talking to others that have been around, apparently it does take years of open mics in front of other shit comedians to eventually get noticed by someone. Apparently everyone gets called back eventually. And as I've said, I don't have 10 years to yap it up for crowds I don't care about. Even if this is how it's done, fuck it. Not this guy. I'd love to do stand-up for a Jerry Seinfeld-size audience, but I need to find a new way to be allowed to do it. Come back next month and you get a percentage of the money from your friends you bring in. What kind of prick friends are doing this? After a few more local stand-up performances, I decided to unceremoniously call it a year. It just wasn't exciting anymore to force myself to do it every week. A week later, I got a call on my voicemail from New York Comedy Club. The week before that, I told the guy that judged me that I couldn't play the bring five people for many years game, yet here's the call I got. Hi, Keith, this is Steve from New York Comedy Club. Even though you talked to me and made your wishes clear, I'm acting like we didn't talk that night, and you should give me a call because I'd like to book you for another show where we fuck you and don't bother watching you perform, thereby causing you to go through the same bullshit 12-year process that no talent has to go through. It's the way I make money, you know. All right. Anyway, I'm very gay, and take care of yourself. Be well. Maybe those weren't the exact words, but that was the gist. I ignored the call, then got another one a week later. I answered it and told the man, respectfully, that I won't ever ask people to see me in a show that isn't about me, and while I don't want to sound like I have a big head, I did just start doing this like everyone else the other week. Everybody sucked, and I won't do that again. And I followed up with, nah, I mean? There was a pause. But I do appreciate the opportunity, I sincerely added. He then moved me up the ladder by inviting me to the following week's industry showcase, where people that matter attend the audience. I said okay. I showed up to this industry show, only to find it another bringer show. And it dawned on me why so many shit comics think they're good. It's because the audience is full of comedy supporters, not comedy demanders. Whatever you do will get a forced laugh. That's why I like the open mic art space. You earned whatever you got. These artists were haters that you were performing for. They didn't just give you the respect. If you weren't drawing a penis with your vagina blood, you had to earn the respect. That's when I called my friend Craig and had him go on stage when my name was called. He squatted down and took a big steamy shit. And then he left with, my time is done, thank you. He's currently on hold as a summer replacement for UPN. One night at the open mic, Craig and I changed things up a little bit. I called it offensive night and would talk about the most offensive things I could think of because I was so daring. Craig was in the audience and he yelled things out like, fucking little children, why men are superior to women, and periods. Like a magician, the answers were all planned out. It was a hit, and as I walked back to my seat waiting to see if the next performer would cry as they sliced their chest or cry while showing their tits, a woman stopped me and asked if that was all planned. I'm sure I knew I'd be asked and had an answer, but I was staring at beauty and I was instantly dumb. Just between us, yes. And I went to my seat. Later on, we talked, me mostly about my love of seeing horrendous acts on stage. Later than that, we banged. Sexually. Her name was Hemda. We started dating, and eventually we moved in together. She would later become my co-host on Keith and the Girl, and we'd eventually break up, but stay working together. She got me into clown parties and children's entertainment, the only job I was ever able to keep. And knowing my disdain for what you had to do to get to be a popular stand-up, but my love for it, she encouraged me to set up my own hour-long stand-up show and sell it as a CD-DVD. I performed it on my 30th birthday and loved it so much that I vowed to perform at least one big show every year on my birthday, making the event bigger and bigger each time. I was doing what I loved, and I met a hot girl that challenged me. I was wrong thinking God didn't grant both gifts. Things were good and I was happy. Then one day, things somehow seemed even better by a certain phone call. Oh, guess who called today? I said to all my friends. Your last girlfriend who got upset you wrote on your site about your relationship. That is a good guess, but wrong. Guess again. The IRS. Okay, you're trying too hard, so I'll just give you one more guess. Think total shock. Dolly Parton. Look, if you're not going to take this serious, Sally Jesse Raphael. Forget it. I'm sorry I said anything. It was John Petrie that called me. He left a message on my cell phone from Houston, Texas. Hey, Keith Malley, how are you? John Petrie here from New York City. As my jaw kept dropping, John went on about how crazy things got mixed up. He got in trouble with the law and he heard I wanted to talk to him. He understands there's been some confusion and he wants to make sure that everything got straightened out. Yes, there was some confusion, John. The confusion is that you stole all my shit. Everything has it, in fact, been straightened out because I never got anything back. Confusion still lingers, John. And he finishes his call with rock and roll. Everything I acquired as an adult is gone, but this guy's rocking and rolling, a regular Shooter McGavin. To be honest, I don't know how I feel about John Petrie contacting me today. It's kind of like when the cops are after a bad guy that committed a heinous crime and the bad guy calls up the police. Yeah, I'm the guy that's been molesting little girls. I'd like to give myself up now. No, it's okay. We almost have you, actually. Well, let me tell you where I'm at. Oh, don't worry about it. It's cool. But wouldn't it be easier if I just... Nah, it'll be much more fun if we do it our way. But thanks, though. Click.
Hey, Keith Malley, it's John Petrie. You okay? I did really bad things to you a long time ago, but my sponsor says I need to call you and see that you're all right by making you relive the biggest trauma in your entire life. So you're okay, right? So when can you make it down to Texas?
As soon as I have my bail money ready. I was nice, though. I left a very nice message on his cell, another on his house phone, an equally nice email reply to his computer. Oh, or was it my computer? Either way, I was nice. If he can get me some of that work back, I might not hand him his e-cord. I wasn't joking about that. But John never called back or wrote back. I wonder if he got high, thought the right thing to do would be to contact me through my website, and then later sobered up and thought, oh shit, what'd I just do? Also, coincidentally, the day after John contacted me, Hurricane Claudette rode into Houston to destroy the town. Yes, I'm honestly okay about it, but I still fantasize about running into him. Oh, hi, John. Welcome to Step 13. Seriously, let me just say this and we'll end it. John, if you get me back that leather black bag of original shit I wrote and videotaped, I will beat you far less severely. I promise. The end. All right, one take. Not bad.
KeithandTheGirl.com